Welcome to this episode of the Environmental Toxicants Autoimmunity and Chronic Diseases Summit. I'm Wendy Trubo, MD, MBA, and this is my co-host, Ed Levitan, MD. We're your hosts of today's episode. And guess what? I know every time I'm excited about our guest, but really I'm super excited because it's one of our new friends, Evan Hirsch, MD. He's also known as the Energy MD, and he's a world-renowned energy expert, best-selling author, and professional speaker. If that's not enough, he's the creator of Energy MD Method, the science-backed and clinically proven four-step process to increase energy naturally, and has helped thousands of people across the world. So, Evan, welcome to the summit recording today. Thanks for being
Wendy,
here.
Wendy, Ed, thank you guys so much for having me on.
We're psyched. We're talking about energy, and I thought it was ironic because someone who shall remain nameless hasn't been sleeping and has been tired.
That never happens.
And full of sunlight and rainbows too.
Spoken like a true wife.
Appreciate the love. And
I love you deeply, dear. So let's talk about energy. I mean, first question I always want to know is like, why are you focusing on this? How did you get into this?
So when I was in high school, my older sister came back from college and she basically didn't leave her room for about a year. Turns out that she had chronic fatigue. I didn't really understand what was happening at the time. But that was really my first experience with it. And then I graduated medical school, started my family medicine residency, met my wife, fell in love, and then she got fatigue. And it lasted for about 3 years. At that point, she was about 80% better. And then we got married. I waited until she was better before. Then we got married. No, I'm just kidding. Then we got married. I started my practice. We had a kid. And then a couple of years later, I got fatigue. And it lasted for about 5 years and just about destroyed my life. I was napping under my desk every day with the door closed, you know, because I was so embarrassed that here I was a functional medicine practitioner and I couldn't fix myself. I couldn't figure out what was wrong. A lot of it had to do with the fact that I wasn't actually treating myself. I wasn't paying attention to what was going on. I was just trying to push through. And it was only when I finally actually realized, hey, I'm a functional medicine provider. All I have to do is find the causes and I'm going to be successful. And so that's what I did. And I found, you know, now I'm up to 37, 38 different causes. And I went through and found the 30 plus causes that I had and fixed them and, you know, got my life back. But, you know, I couldn't help out my wife at home. We had this new baby she was a toddler at that point. It was like, daddy, play with me. And I'm like, I can't, I'm just lying on the couch. Stacy's just come out of her fatigue. And she's like, can you do the dishes? I'm like, no, I'm lying on the couch. You know, I had to keep hiring people at the office to do my job. Like, it was bad news. So that's my mission now, is to help a million people increase their energy so they don't have to deal with what I dealt with.
That's pretty profound. What about energy? Like, what is energy? Let's kind of dive deep. Like, so you said you had no energy. So is it just really just that? Is just a sense of no vibrancy? Is there more to it? How does one, like, if you're tired in the morning when you wake up, or if you're tired at the end of the day, at the end of a long day, do you have no energy? Is it okay? Is a woman that has kids and has a career and tired, is that okay? Where's the line?
When is it a problem, right?
Yeah. So it's subjective. So it's different for everybody. But the reality is that if your energy is not where you want it to be, there's a problem. And if you're compensating for low energy by utilizing some tool, whether it's caffeine, you know, whether it's an energy drink, or whether it's napping during the day, or whether it's, you know, some sort of stimulant that needs to get you going, there's a problem. And the reality is that when you have low energy, it's a harbinger. It's the, you know, it's something that's telling your body, hey, there's a problem. And if you don't fix it now, you're going to have to fix it later, because the reality is that these causes of low energy and fatigue are also the causes of heart attack, heart disease, strokes, Alzheimer's, cancer. So you deal with it now or you deal with it later.
Yeah. So listening to one's body is, at least at the minimum, I think that part of it is we're trained to, in college, you were talking about college, we're trained to pull all-nighters, we're trained to go coffee, just get it done. And I think some people can do that fine, and a lot of people can't. And the people that can't look at the people that can and say, what's wrong with me? I just need some more coffee.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely think our society is backwards in terms of our ability to really listen.
Well, I always have that conversation with my patients where they're like, okay, doc, is coffee bad? Like, intrinsically, it's not bad. But if you're using it because you have no energy and you're using it to force your body to produce energy, then yes, it's bad because you're then exacerbating the problem instead of listening to what your body needs. So if you're using it as an experience, right? Like we're sitting down, we're having a little coffee and it's a chat, and I'm not using it because I can't keep my eyes open. It never worked for me, by the way. I remember falling asleep in my all-nighter post-all-nighter test, drinking coffee, falling asleep as I jittered off the page. That was it. Didn't keep me awake though, just made me jittery. So that was like one and done. But yeah, so it's not intrinsically bad. It's just how you use it.
I agree. And, you know, unfortunately in our society today, and so many of the patients that we see is, you know, there's a lot of mental and emotional stuff in addition to the physical. So, you know, one of the things we can talk about is energy from all these different perspectives. You know, it's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual, it's physical. Like, where are these energy drainers? And how much of this comes from developmental trauma where, you know, we need to be perfect, or we need to be pushing, or we need to achieve, right? I mean, I've achieved so much in my life by pushing through, and that's great. But unfortunately, it got me to a point where, you know, it put me in trouble. You know, my body could not compensate any longer. So that's the larger issue that we see, that we kind of have to retrain people in society. And unfortunately, it needs to be more of a global societal change as well.
I'm guilty of that. I mean, we were on vacation and I got sick, but I didn't know I was sick. And then we went to this mountain to climb. And it was the base, the elevation of the base camp of Mount Everest. So it was really high.
Wow.
So I just figured I had altitude sickness. I didn't know I was sick. And so I was determined that I was going to climb that mountain because there's nothing wrong with me, right? I'm just pushing through. But I didn't want to miss out on that experience.
And as a gynecologist.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did an OBGYN residency and practically wrecked my health. Well, I got autoimmune disease in residency. But I mean, I know for myself, the OBGYN residency was 20 years ago, but this was only a few months ago. I still really struggle with where's that line between pushing through and not pushing through and just being like, yeah, I mean, I didn't have to climb that mountain. I have amazing pictures and amazing memories, but I didn't have to do that. And I think it's hard for a lot of people to sort of in the moment draw the line and go, yeah, this isn't working for me. I didn't go on the 6-hour hike that you went on. I was like, I'm far too sick to do that. But I can climb a quarter of a mile. It took me an hour and a half, but I'll do that. But I think it's hard for people.
Yeah, I think most people are used to pushing through and getting up, drinking their coffee and going to work. And
yeah, and with our kids, like when they say they're really tired, I'm like, okay, you should rest. But does that mean skipping your activities? Or does that mean, I think it's really hard to navigate this. So my heart goes out to people because I struggle with it. I think you struggle with it.
Yeah, it's always... No.
So you mentioned 37 causes of low energy. Like
I did.
What are they? From A to Z.
In 10 seconds flat, let's go. Yeah.
Well, let's divide them into categories, make this a little bit easier. And yes, for people who are listening, do not get overwhelmed by the number. Just realize that you just walk through a process and you fix all of them as you go. And it doesn't take
journey.
You as long as you think it is. Exactly.
Journey, not a destination.
Exactly. So we've got deficiencies, so things that are not in the body that are supposed to be. And we've got toxicities or toxicants. We've got, these are things that are in the body that aren't supposed to be. It's a good thing we're on this summit and we're talking about this thing. So with the deficiency, these things that are not in the body that are supposed to be, we're talking about deficiencies in hormones. So adrenals and thyroid and sex hormones, deficiencies in mitochondria or dysfunction in mitochondria, which makes 80 to 90% of our energy and produces our ATP. We're talking about deficiencies in vitamins, in minerals, in neurotransmitters, and then in lifestyle habits like not enough sleep, not enough water, not enough good food, not enough movement. And then with the toxins, we're looking at things like heavy metals, chemicals, You know, there's 86,000 different chemicals we're exposed to on a regular basis, 500 chemicals before most people walk out of the house in the morning, if you're still commuting, that you've been exposed to, from your shampoo to your soap, you know, like whatever, plastics, cosmetics, exactly. So that's heavy metals and chemicals, molds, you know, and I recently heard from somebody saying, actually, it's more than 50% of all buildings in first world countries. It's actually more like 60 or 70% have water damage. And most of those have mold. And consequently, you can get all the symptoms and the dysfunctions associated with mold. And then there's infections, whether it's parasitic infections, and no, you do not have to leave the country in order to get parasitic infections, whether it's Lyme type infections, you know, no, you don't have to get bitten by a tick to get Lyme and some of the co-infections that we can talk about today. Maybe it's Epstein-Barr virus, maybe it's COVID, you know, with now long COVID, with the really high numbers, 30 to 50% of everybody who gets COVID ends up with persistent symptoms. Right. Then there's the negative emotional patterns and the trauma that people have experienced, electromagnetic fields, you know, anything that Wi-Fi, 5G, 4G, whatever. So, you know, you break all those out and you come up with 37 different ones. Hypercoagulation is one, constipation is another. So there's a number of them. Hypercoagulation, for those who don't know, is basically thick blood. And it happens when you have a number of these different infections, but it decreases the oxygen supply to the different parts of the body. But there's a lot of causes, but all you got to know is that you start working through these before you know it. You know, you invest some time into it and you're going to be back on track.
You make it sound really easy, Evan.
It's not easy.
Theoretically. You're supposed to say it's easy.
No, we want to have hope. There's hope. It's fixable. It's just not as easy as waving the wand.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And part of what I'm talking about is that you wake up every day and you're committed. You know, you're committed to taking the supplements you're supposed to. You're committed to checking in with, you know, in our case, it's our community, or getting on your one-on-one calls or the group calls. It's working on your mindset every single day. We've got an energy mindset practice, working on your emotions. You know, we have trauma-informed coaches on staff, you know, so it's like all this stuff in addition to the physical, but you just have to put one foot in front of the other and you get there, but you have to make that commitment.
Mm-hmm. You start somewhere. Yeah. Why do people experience that it's so hard to treat? I mean, this seems sort of low hanging, right? Because you live in the universe, and even as you're pulling off the toxins and the stressors, you're adding more to the mix. But what are the places people fall down in their recovery?
So it's the number one reason why people don't get well is because they don't find all of their causes. And it's just because, and I was, you know, one of these physicians as well, is that not all physicians want to deal with mold and Lyme and long COVID and all this sort of stuff. You know, like it's very complex, it's challenging, and requires a lot of support, and it's a lot of work. And I didn't want to do it, but I was forced to because I got sick with it. And I had enough people who showed up in front of me and said, you have to read this, you have to learn this, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I had to move in that direction. And it's been, you know, very helpful in getting people better. But that's the biggest thing, is that people don't figure out the causes. Now, of those 37, 38 different causes, everybody has at least, that we see, has at least 20, you know, and so there's a combination of causes, and everybody has a different combination. So Sally Sue might have 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 12, whatever, and Joe Schmo might have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, right? So, and so on, right? So it's just this combination of causes that everybody has that makes them an individual. And those are the layers of the onion that have to be peeled off one by one.
Who is that? I think it was like a pediatrician who is one of the founders of functional medicine said, if you're sitting on a tack and you're not going to feel better till you take the tack out. But if you're sitting on 10 tacks and you remove one tack, you're still going to have a lot of problems until you start to remove all of those tacks. So I'm just, that reminded me, do you know who it was? So he was like, he just died within the last few years.
Not sure.
I'm not good at recalling names. Yeah, so I'm not going to come up with it. We'll have to look it up. But he said that. And it's
Beautiful. And I think that's a lot of functional medicine physicians' journeys, at least the people that want to continue. I know I didn't want to get into Lyme because it was for many, many reasons. and now I'm the we line guy in the practice.
That's, Massachusetts residency is one of them where we live.
But it's really, yeah, we may not want to get into it. And I agree, a lot of, especially new functional medicine doctors, it's just overwhelming.
Well, it's like drinking from the fire hose, you know, there's so much to learn. And then you're like mold, mycotoxins, heavy metals, Lyme.
And what do you treat first? How do you do it safely?
Yeah. Yes.
All this stuff. And what it sounds like, which I love, is not only do you have that knowledge base, but that you have a system and you have the support, which is pretty dang awesome. Because it's not easy to put this together, especially with complex, with multiple issues. So I'll kind of say it. The thing I tell people I see with Lyme disease is there are three kinds of Lyme people. People that have Lyme that don't know, don't care. People that have Lyme disease that take 2 weeks of antibiotics and they're fine. And then there are people that see us. And those are the people that have gone through 10 to 20 to 50 doctors that can't get an answer, that have at least 3 to 5 major issues. I know you talk about 20. Depending on how you sort it, but 3 or 5 major issues and then a lot of other issues. And that's the thing I think that a lot of people miss in our society, which is a very linear society. Oh, I have fatigue. I need to take some CoQ10 or some coffee or whatever it is, and I'm done, because that's right. Fatigue equals this, but it's really fatigue equals all this. And we've got to find a system. So it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a different paradigm. It's a different way of looking at it. You know, we want the easy fix because we're human, you know, whether it's a supplement or whether it's a prescription. But the reality is that, you know, as humans, we're complex individuals and physiologically, among other things. And so we have to take all that into account.
So you basically took your mess became your message, right, Evan?
Exactly.
So you took your mess and baked it into something pretty amazing, which is this 4-step method that you use, right? Can you talk about that?
Sure. So the first step is figuring out what causes somebody has, right? We've talked about how there's 20 plus different causes that people show up with. Now, fortunately, of those 38 causes we've been talking about, 75%, or actually I just calculated the other day, 79% of them can be determined by symptoms alone.
Okay.
So you can know just by figuring out, just by going through, you know, we've got a workbook, we have people go through our step one, they're going to know 79% of their causes, which is incredibly powerful, because then you can actually just spend the rest of your time matching up the solution with those particular causes. So that's the first step. Then in the second step, we replace the deficiencies. The reality is that this process is all about step 4 and removing the toxins. But in order to deal with those and remove those, we have to be strong enough in order to be able to do that. So in step 2, we replace the deficiencies, adrenals, mitochondria, thyroid, or what we call the big 3, because they're going to make a significant improvement in people's energy, increases stamina, increases resilience. Then we work on some of the lifestyle habits and stuff like that, in addition to some of the other deficiencies, but we don't spend too much time in step 2. Then we go into step 3 and we open up the drainage pathways. So intestines, liver, kidney, lymph, neurolymph, gallbladder, making sure that when we go into step 4 and we actually start grabbing heavy metals or chemicals or molds or whatever, that they have a place to go, that you can actually get them outside the body, right? And step 3 is one of those places where if you feel worse on treatment, this is the reason why, is because you didn't spend enough time opening up those drainage pathways. And the way that I like to look at this is like a funnel. So it's kind of like you're going to be dumping these toxins into the funnel of these drainage pathways. And if the bottom of this funnel is tight, guess what? Those toxins are just going to go right back into different compartments in the body. But if you've done step 3 properly, it's open and things will flow out. And the goal is that the rate at which you want to get rid of these toxicants is the amount at which you have dumped them in. So essentially, you know, it's easy so that you're not overflowing. And then in step 4, it's removing the heavy metals, the chemicals, the molds, the infections, the allergies, the negative emotional patterns, the electromagnetic fields.
That's it, huh?
Sounds easy. How long does a typical person take to go through those steps?
So all of our programs are 12 months. They used to be 6 months, but we found that wasn't long enough. So 12 months, but there are people who sometimes need to take longer periods of time. So if they've got MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome, if they've got multiple chemical sensitivity, you know, if they're having a hard time tolerating supplements, or if they're living in mold and they can't get out, some of these are reasons, or if, you know, negative emotional patterns, if they got significant trauma and they're not able or willing to do a limbic system retraining program or actually work on their mental, emotional health, then it takes longer. You know?
And for the people listening, we've talked to Amy Apigian during the summit, and she talks a lot about the biology of trauma and the ways to retrain the body. So that would be a good episode to tune into.
Absolutely.
Okay. So your program is a year, and obviously there's a bell curve, and some people are faster and some people are slower. Who are the people who fail the program? You know, like upfront, are you able to say, like, you're not a good candidate, you're not going to win?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when I get on free 20-minute calls with people, I'm always trying to figure out, can I help you? And are you a good fit for the program? And so I know if I can help somebody, if they haven't addressed all of these causes, and I can tell by their symptoms, hey, this is a cause that I believe that you've missed, and I can help you with that. Or if they've gone after a particular cause and they haven't been successful, but they haven't been using necessarily the solution that I would use. You know, so if somebody did antibiotics for Lyme, and it turns out that, and they didn't have success with it, but they weren't really going after Bartonella or Babesia, and they're sweating up a storm and they got pain on the bottom of their feet. So that's always what I'm looking at. So, and then in terms of them being a good fit for the program, like I saw an 82-year-old on a call the other day, and I was like, I don't think so. She's going to be a good fit because, you know, like I'm 100% online. So, you know, how do you do with Zoom? How do you do, can you order supplements online and then organize them so that you can take supplements, you know, 3 to 5 times a day? Can you show up for group calls, for one-on-ones? Are you completely bedridden? You know, how much handholding do you need? Are you willing to work on your mental and emotional health? That's always a big one for us. Are you willing to engage with our online community, not on Facebook? You know, we're really excited about our new platform. So those are the things that we see. And are you willing and able to get out of a moldy home? Mm-hmm. That's always a big one. So those are generally the people that really aren't a good fit for our program at this time. And in terms of people failing the program, I would say that, you know, that's usually those people, but it's if they can't tolerate, and we get very creative with supplements. You know, we have a lot of MCAS people in our program. So oftentimes if they can't tolerate oral supplements, then we're going topically, or we're focused on things like saunas or coffee enemas, some exogenous different types of therapies. Cause you know, if you've got immune system dysfunction and 80% of your immune system is in the gut, then anything that you throw down the gullet, you can potentially react to. So we have to bypass that in some way. So, for those people, it just usually takes longer, but it has to do with also the commitment. You know, like if people keep showing up, they're going to get the results because we're going to figure out what's going wrong. We're going to keep tweaking it. We're going to keep pivoting. I've got lots of tools, you know. So it's just about if people are willing to continue that, to continue walking that path. And if they realize that it's a marathon, you know, so much of this is expectations, right? It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
What, how many times do you feel like you've backslid in your own process and journey where you're like, oh, wait, I'm on the cusp of it again?
Yeah.
It's human, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you were just talking about Ed not having good sleep, but about 6 months ago, I started having problems with sleep. And so I've been kind of exploring that as well. And one of the things that I haven't been, you know, that I only learned about just a couple of years ago was parasites. And that was one thing that I hadn't treated myself with initially or for initially. And so now I'm starting to do more of that. And so it's like, okay, so I went after parasites, but it was too strong, had to back off, you know? So just kind of, I tell people that this process is very much 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But as long as you're doing 2 steps forward, 1 step back, guess what? You'll still complete a journey of 1,000,000 miles. It just might take a little bit longer. But that's where you need a mentor like us, right? Where it's for those bumps in the path and for people who wanna walk that path with a mentor. I don't have all the answers, you know, but I'm gonna do my darndest for folks, and I'm gonna have compassion, and I'm gonna hold their hand on the journey.
I have a question, but I want to make sure that I don't totally like steamroll over.
Yeah, it's all you.
Do you have a guideline for people for how many hours in bed you want them to try to get for sleep? I'm just curious. Like,
yeah, I mean, I stick with 7 to 9 hours. I mean, oftentimes we have to recreate their circadian rhythm. We've got somebody in our program right now who would get up at noon every day, and then she'd be like up and down for about 9 hours while she was awake and whatever. But I find that, you know, through some of the supplementation and some of the things that we're doing, then all of a sudden now they're waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning. They're getting 13 hours of awake time, but 7 to 9 hours is what I recommend. And what I'm finding too, which is really interesting in myself using my Oura Ring and then also in a number of clients, is that the earlier you go to sleep, the better. I used to say like 10 o'clock was good. Now I'm saying like 9 o'clock is even better. And the hours that you get, I remember my mom saying this growing up, the hours you get before midnight count as double. And I was like, mom, whatever. But that's what I'm really seeing, is that people's scores are significantly higher when they go to sleep earlier. And you know, when they're doing all the other things we recommend.
I talk about this a lot. I'm obsessed. I wear the Whoop. I'm obsessed with my data. And every morning, I wake up, I say to the system, okay, I'm awake now. And then it processes. And then I look, that's like one of the things I do in the morning is evaluate my sleep. How did I sleep? How much was I awake? How was it? But what's so interesting is this is, goes back to the pushing through part is, I would say before BC, before COVID, I used to routinely get 7 hours in bed. And 7 hours in bed does not translate into 7 hours of sleep. It's somewhere between 6.25 and 6.5, depending on the quality of sleep. And then when we took away we never left the office, right? We live like 5 minutes from our house. So we continued going to the office. But when we took away driving the kids to school and driving the kids to all their activities and all the running around, we were both able to get more hours in bed. And now I'm happiest 9 hours in bed. Mm-hmm. Even 10 hours in bed, actually, I'm kind of happy.
Like, nice.
Because then I can get 9 hours of sleep, which is
More is definitely better. You know, and the thing is that you don't realize what you're missing until you actually start giving it to your body. And it's not going to know right away. It's going to start grabbing onto more, and you're going to feel more tired because the body's like, oh, yeah, I really like that. But yeah, it's really interesting what happens when you start giving the body what it needs, because yeah, it's going to be different for everybody. But for most people, it really is on the higher side of that, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours, though most people can actually get in the 90s, at least on the Oura Ring, if they're getting more than 7 hours, as long as they've got good stages of sleep and they're going to sleep at the right time and stuff like that. But I would concur. I think that more is better in this case.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'll add to that is, especially when you're recovering, you want more sleep. That's when you recover. So if you're talking about people with chronic disease, you want the, I'd say 8 to 9 to 10 hours of sleep while you're recovering. Afterwards, yes, go back to your 7, 8, 9, whatever it is.
Not seven.
Not you. But when you recover, people don't, just like we were talking about listening to your body about fatigue, it's the same thing. We need sleep, and most of us will not give enough time. So it's really important to be gentle with yourself and give yourself time to recover. And it takes 3 to 12 months to recover. It's not a quick process. Right. People want to be done in a couple of weeks, but I've been sleeping for a couple of weeks. I'm all good.
I've eaten well for a week. Why am I at my ideal weight?
Right.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I was going to come back to what Wendy was saying about the 7 hours, is that you're absolutely right, because nobody gets 100% efficient sleep. You know, you're lucky if you're getting 90% efficient, right? And so aiming for 8 hours in bed at least is ideal, because then, you know, at least you're going to get hopefully 7 hours of good sleep, as long as your sleep architecture is good.
Where do you fall on alcohol? Because alcohol is in and of itself a toxicant, and is an acute toxicant that essentially diverts and delays all other work. Having led the witness down the path, where would you
fall? So I'm a big fan of alcohol now. No, I mean, and it's really interesting also with the data to see what happens. You know, like if I have an alcoholic drink, like the next day I'm like, boom, 60s. You know, in terms of my score. And that, yes, it may, you know, help you fall asleep, but the reality is that sleep that you're getting is not good.
And it messes with your sleep architecture.
Exactly.
It's not as good.
Right. But there's lots of people, obviously, you know, they're self-treating, they're self-medicating because they've got anxiety or whatever it is. And it helps, they think it's helping them sleep. But the reality is that it's not.
So you've sort of tiptoed around this. Do you, I feel comfortable getting in your face about this. Do you say to people, I recommend you don't drink? Or do you say, do what you want, but it's not the best idea? Like, where do you fall on that?
I've got certain non-negotiables, but I'm a big fan of autonomy and empowerment. So, and I'm very collaborative. So I don't, if people are like, hey, I'm not giving this up, I'm like, okay, just know that at some point we may have to have this conversation again because you may not be getting the progress that you want. It's like what you said about the tacks in the bottom of the foot, right? If you remove the, if you've got, you know, 20 different causes, and let's say you've got 20 tacks in the bottom of your foot, and you remove the gluten tack, you may not notice a difference. But the reality is that you're going to have a lot more success if you keep gluten out of your diet, right? And the same thing goes for things like alcohol and whatnot. It's like, okay, I understand right now, but you're going to have a lot more success if you remove it. So I try to do it with education and with motivational interviewing, but I'm not super strict on a lot of that stuff. I try to lead people there.
I always say to my patients, you know, one, if you're drinking for stress reduction, let's work on stress reduction instead of alcohol. And two, if you're drinking because you want the experience, then let's see if we can convert your experience so that you have either a smaller glass, so you're intrinsically drinking less, or you have a spritzer of some sort. So you dilute the alcohol, so you still have the experience, just like the coffee drinkers like the experience.
Right.
Keep the experience, but decrease the intrinsic amount you're getting. But,
yeah, I mean, you when you talk to people who have a pub on every corner, right, and that's the social place, right. It's very challenging when that's a big part of your identity, and your social connection, you know, because then there's other problems. You remove that, you remove people's social connection if they can't show up.
Yeah, it's funny. I stopped drinking 15 years ago. We went out for Ed's dad's birthday and I drank a whole bottle of sake myself. And it took me about a month to recover. I wasn't hungover. I just didn't feel well. And I remember saying to myself, okay, self, you clearly have adrenal dysfunction. And if a big bottle is doing that to you, then a smaller amount is doing that in lesser amounts. So we're not going to do it until our adrenals are recovered. Like we were talking, you know, me and myself were talking to each other. So I haven't drunk since then. And the amount of peer pressure that I've experienced, and I'm 52 in a couple of days, like people are still like, why aren't you drinking? And I'm like, I don't like how I feel.
Yeah.
I don't like the taste and I don't like how I feel. So I don't want to do it. But it is really interesting because it's hard to be that person who doesn't drink.
Whenever. Well, you are that person.
I'm that person anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You know? I don't eat gluten. I don't drink alcohol.
Well, and so much of that is the mindfulness component, right? When you pay attention and you actually see how you feel, whether it's in relationship with somebody, whether it's based off something that you eat or drink, then all of a sudden you can make more of a change, I believe, and you can be more empowered to stand strong and realize, hey, I'm not going to do this to myself.
Yeah, you just really touched on something that we haven't talked about at all in this summit or even in this conversation, which is toxic relationships. Like every once in a while, I'll get someone across. I mean, we have in person. So every once in a while, someone will be sitting across the table and I'll say, I can't help you until it's either a toxic relationship or a toxic job. Those are the two biggest. Sometimes it's a toxic home, but that's not a relationship per se. That's an experience. So it's those two relationships that can be so toxic for people that I can't help you until you address that. Cause that's just like the spider web stuck to your face. You can't go get around it.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually had a conversation with somebody this morning who I told her to leave her job. And I don't do that lightly, but it's the kind of thing where she's a nurse and, you know, she's kind of gone, she's elevated over time. And now she's in this high powered position and it's so incredibly stressful. And she's like, why am I taking all these supplements to heal my gastritis? I don't want to take these supplements anymore. And I said, you can take a lot less supplements if you manage your stress better and you quit your job. And we had had lots of conversations about managing her stress, but it's like, there are some jobs and some relationships out there where you can do so much internal work and it's near impossible for you to get to the place that you need to. Because if your stress is unmanageable, then your immune system is going to be dysfunctional and infections are going to be rampant and you're not going to be able to manage them.
Thank you. I mean, speaking of that, how talk to us a little bit about, you said you have a coach that, I forgot the exact words, trauma
informed.
Informed. So how does that work? Because trauma is, first, trauma is an interesting word, but that being said, it's so personal. A lot of people don't necessarily want to get into that. How do you kind of frame it so that people actually start to be willing to at least have a conversation, start that conversation?
So I start by normalizing it. So I say that there's big T trauma and little T trauma, and everybody has little T trauma. You know, I was not physically abused, but I was rejected by a peer group several times in my life. And consequently, that changed the way that I saw the world. And that increased the internal stress that I felt and my relationship to the world and to other people. And consequently, that has a negative effect on my immune system and all these other things that we work on physically. So you don't have to have big T trauma in order to have to work on your developmental trauma. Like, our parents do the best job that they can, but they're imperfect. Just like I'm imperfect and I do the best job for my daughter, but I fail her every day and I have to apologize often.
I always say, I'll pay for the therapy. I know we've created something. I'll pay for your therapy.
Exactly. Well, I'm already doing that. But it's, so it's really important to take a look at that and being like, yeah, I love my parents and they did a really great job. And I still have developmental trauma, you know, and this is why I push through, because I want to please my dad, because I want to please my mom, because their needs were ahead of mine, whatever it is. I don't understand my needs, you know? And so that's kind of like what Stacy does, who's my wife, who's a mindfulness coach and a trauma-informed coach. She teaches our meditation. And then she also she's a NARM practitioner. NARM, which stands for Neuroaffective Relational Model for Trauma. And it's a mindfulness-based technique. And it's learning how to work with those emotions and the uncomfortable emotions. And I have a NARM practitioner that I work with one-on-one on a regular basis. So it's just about improving our emotional intelligence, our mindset, our physical health, you know, all of that stuff has to be addressed.
So you are in a family business also. That's what I took away from that.
I borrow her. Yes, but she's got her own business and doing like a bunch of really cool public health stuff in addition to her private practice. But then I borrow her for part of our program.
Right. For those years that I supported you, for those years you supported me, you're coming in.
That's right. I'm like, please, please, I need this information and I'm not going to go back and get trained in it, but my people need this. So, okay.
All right.
Evan, what else should people know? What else?
How can they reach you?
So they can find me at energymdmethod.com. And there's a little widget in the bottom right corner. If they want to start a conversation with me, they can click on that and start a conversation. And we can chat back and forth over text and see if we're a good fit to work together. I'm also, I've got a free Facebook group and everywhere on social media. But, you know, it's really all about people getting educated, you know, whichever practitioner you want to go with. You just want to make sure that you resonate with them. You know, it's got to be somebody that you want to hang out with because you're going to be spending a lot of time with them. Mm-hmm. And you need to show up and you need to use them as a mentor and walk together down this health path.
It's great. And remember, it's a journey, not a destination. You're never going to be there.
It is a journey.
Get better. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Environmental Toxicants, Autoimmunity and Chronic Diseases Summit. It's Ed and Wendy, and our guest today was Dr. Evan Hirsch. And what a pleasure, Evan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
As always, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.